Welcome to the Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church. You know, usually when people talk about balance, they're talking about something pretty mundane. Balancing a checkbook, balancing work and life, maybe balancing a diet so you can justify that second slice of pizza.
Right. It's usually just about maintenance, keeping things steady so they don't crash.
Exactly. But today we are looking at a balancing act with much higher stakes. We're synthesizing two sermons by Pastor Tim Travis that, if you just look at the titles or the surface themes, they seem to be pulling in completely opposite directions.
They do. It's a paradox that really sits right at the center of the Christian experience.
It really is.
It's a fascinating juxtaposition. On one side of the scale, you have this intense, almost heavy call to duty.
Right.
It's the concept of stewardship, the idea that you are being audited, you're accountable, and you have to manage every square inch of your life with absolute precision.
Which, to be honest, that sounds a little stressful.
It does.
It sounds like having a micromanager breathing down your neck.
It can feel that way. But then, on the other side of the scale, you have this message of absolute victory. The idea that the game is rigged in your favor, that you are more than a conqueror.
Yeah.
And that, really, nothing can actually touch you.
So on one hand, it's, you better get this right because the boss is watching and keeping score. And on the other, it's, relax, the game is fixed, you've already won.
That's the tension. Mm-hmm. And the big question we're exploring in this deep dive is, how does a believer balance that serious responsibility of managing God's property with the comforting assurance that God is fighting for them?
It's the difference between working for a strict auditor and being the child of a loving father.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, Pastor Travis argues, it's both. We're looking at a message from 1 Corinthians 4 on stewardship, and then another one from Romans 8 on the victory of divine love.
Two very different texts, one unified worldview.
And just a quick reminder before we jump into the deep end, if you want to hear these full sermons, and trust me, there is a lot of nuance in there that we just can't cover in our time here.
Oh, for sure.
They are available on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Or you can just visit faithwayfbc.com for all that information. Okay, let's unpack this first concept. The administrator.
This is foundational. Pastor Travis starts his analysis in 1 Corinthians 4, and he spends some time defining what a steward actually is.
Right.
Now be honest. When I say stewardship, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Usually. A fundraising campaign.
Right.
Someone standing at a podium asking for money to fix the church roof or pave the parking lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In modern culture, we've sort of reduced stewardship to charitable giving. But Pastor Travis argues that it's a massive oversimplification.
Mm-hmm.
He lists out the definitions from the text: an administrator, a curator, a guardian. But the most important part of the definition isn't what you do. It's what you don't do.
Which is?
You don't own anything.
Nothing. Not my car. My house.
Zero. The fundamental shift in mindset here is realizing that a steward is someone who manages property, finances, and affairs that belong to someone else.
You're essentially a property manager for the Creator.
That's it.
He told this great story to illustrate this. I think it was about J.P. Morgan, the banking tycoon.
That's the one.
So this wealthy tycoon dies, a titan of industry, massive fortune. And at the funeral, people are whispering in the back, speculating on his assets.
Yeah.
And someone asks, I wonder how much wealth he left behind.
And the answer was just perfect.
All of it.
Yeah, all of it. It's a bit of dark humor, but it's technically true. You don't see a U-Haul hitched to the back of a hearse.
No luggage racks on a coffin.
Precisely. And Pastor Travis uses that reality to set up a binary choice. He goes to Matthew 6. No man can serve two masters.
You can't serve God and mammon.
Right.
Now, hold on. Mammon is a word we hear in church or, maybe in old literature, but is it just a fancy King James word for cash?
It's deeper than that. Mammon, in the ancient context, wasn't just physical currency. It was the personification of wealth.
Oh.
It represents the system of the world, the reliance on riches as a source of security. It's a rival god.
So it's not just about having money in your wallet. It's about what you trust to save you.
Exactly. The point isn't that you can't have money. It's that you can't serve it. You can't have two CEOs running the company of your life.
It's an either proposition.
Pastor Travis makes that very clear. You are either managing resources for God, or you are a slave to the system of mammon.
It's an exclusive contract. You can't moonlight for mammon while you're working for God.
Right. So if we accept that we are managers, not owners, the next logical question is, what exactly are we managing?
Yeah, if I'm an administrator, I need to know what's in my portfolio.
And Pastor Travis breaks this down into four specific areas. And honestly, the first one surprised me a bit.
The temple.
Yeah, he starts with the temple. He's referencing 1 Corinthians 6.19 here. Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost?
This is interesting because we live in a culture that's obsessed with the body. We have gyms, diets, plastic surgery.
Oh, tracking, yeah.
But the motivation is usually vanity or longevity for our own sake.
Right. But the steward's motivation is different. Pastor Travis argues that your physical body was bought with a price. It's company property.
So it's the housing unit for the Spirit of God.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just trash the company car and expect the boss to be happy about it.
That's a great analogy.
Okay.
If your boss gave you a brand new vehicle to do your sales calls and you never changed the oil, you drove it into curbs.
Filled the back seat with fast food wrappers.
You're a bad steward. Not because you don't love yourself, but because you don't respect the owner.
That puts a different spin on leg day. It's not for the beach. It's for the maintenance of the asset. Okay, the second area in the portfolio is the mysteries of God. This sounds a bit Dan Brown. What are we talking about here?
No secret societies involved. Pastor Travis describes the Bible and the gospel as a sort of code or mystery to the outside world. To someone who doesn't believe, the Bible is confusing. It's foolishness.
It's a locked door.
It is. So the believer is, what? The decoder ring.
In a way, yes. The steward is responsible for the mysteries. That means it is your job to take this complex spiritual truth and explain it to a world that doesn't get it.
You're the custodian of the message.
And if you stay silent, you're essentially hiding the master's assets in a basement.
Which transitions perfectly into the third area.
Yeah.
Manifold grace. This comes from 1 Peter 4.10. Good stewards of the manifold grace of God.
This was the heaviest part of the sermon for me.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Travis shared a tragic story here to illustrate why this matters. He spoke about a man who had recently taken his own life after being released from prison.
Yeah, that was rough to hear. A life full of brokenness, drugs, bad decisions, just a spiral.
And the tragedy, as Pastor Travis pointed out, wasn't just the death. It was the question, what if that man had really known the grace of God? He argued that the world is absolutely starving for grace. They are desperate for it. And believers are supposed to be the bank tellers dispensing that currency.
I like that image. We aren't the source of the grace. We don't manufacture it.
No.
But we are the distributors.
Exactly. If you are hoarding, grace-holding grudges, refusing to forgive, judging people, you are embezzling the master's funds.
Wow.
He gave you grace so you could pass it on. You are authorized to spend his grace on others.
And finally, the fourth area is the one we started with, material things, money, possessions.
But notice it's last on the list.
That's a good point.
God doesn't need your money. As Pastor Travis said, he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. The point of giving isn't to fund God. It's to prove that you acknowledge he gave it to you in the first place.
Okay, so we have the what? We manage our bodies, the message, the grace, and our stuff. But what about the how?
Right.
Because I can be a manager, but I can be a grumpy, resentful manager who does the bare minimum.
And the sources point to a very specific attitude required for this job. The fear of the Lord.
Now, I have to push back on this term a little bit. Because fear, in our current context, implies trauma. It implies abuse. Is Pastor Travis saying we should be walking around terrified of God?
Like we're waiting to get struck by lightning.
Ah, exactly.
It's a valid concern, but Pastor Travis is very clear on this. It is not a horror movie fear. It's not trembling in terror. He describes it as the beginning of wisdom and actually a place of safety.
A place of safety? That seems contradictory to fear.
Think of it like a lighthouse or a secure harbor during a storm. He uses this great comparison between paranoia and proper fear.
Okay.
The foolish person, the person without God, is paranoid about everything. They fear the economy, the election, the what-ifs, the cancer diagnosis. They are afraid of everything.
But the steward.
The steward fears only God. And the logic is, if you properly fear or reverence the master, you don't have to fear anything else in the universe. It simplifies your anxiety down to one single relationship.
You only have one person to please. But you have to know what that person wants.
Right. And this is where the humor comes in. Pastor Travis told a story about a guy who gets a new job at a grocery store chain.
The wrong store story. I loved this.
It's so good. So the boss calls this guy up after a week and says, how's it going? And the guy says, it's amazing. I'm working 12 hours a day. I'm organizing the shelves. I'm sweeping the floors. I'm helping customers. I am on fire.
And the boss pauses and says, that's great. but you're at the wrong location.
Oof. Imagine that sinking feeling. You've been productive, you've been busy, you've been exhausted, but you haven't been obedient.
That's a brutal takeaway. You can be a good person doing good things, but if you aren't doing the specific will of the master, you're just stocking shelves in a store you don't work at.
And that connects directly to the accountability aspect, the audit. Pastor Travis cites Romans 14:1, so then every one of us shall give account of himself to God.
He compared it to the IRS.
Yes. And anyone who has been through a tax audit knows the feeling. You can't just wave your hand and say, hey, I think I spent about $20 on charity.
Right. They want the receipt.
They want the date. They want it to the penny. Pastor Travis argues that God keeps an account even more detailed than the IRS. He mentioned that God remembers days we've completely forgotten.
That is a sobering thought.
It is.
We can't even remember what we had for breakfast three Tuesdays ago.
Right.
But the master has the logbook.
Okay. I have to pause here.
Yeah.
Because this feels heavy.
It is heavy.
You're being audited. Don't work at the wrong store. Fear the Lord. If we stop the deep dive right now, I'm leaving feeling pretty stressed out. I feel like I'm failing the inspection.
And that is exactly why Pastor Travis doesn't stop there. That is the duty side of the coin. But you cannot live on duty alone.
You'll burn out.
You'll burn out or you'll quit. This is where the second sermon comes in and flips the script completely. We go from the audit to the victory lap.
We move to Romans 8. If God be for us, who can be against us?
This is the counterbalance. If the first part was about our responsibility to God, this is about God's commitment to us.
Pastor Travis uses a sports analogy here that I think perfectly captures the vibe. He talks about a rigged game.
A rigged game. Usually that's a bad thing. We want fair play.
Usually. But imagine if you were playing in the Super Bowl. And imagine you had a script in your locker that said, specifically, your team wins 34-28.
I know the outcome.
You know it's guaranteed. How does that change the way you play the second quarter?
Well, if the other team scores a touchdown, I'm not throwing my helmet. I'm not panicking.
Exactly. You play loose. You play with confidence. You might even smile when you get tackled.
Because you know the end of the movie.
And Pastor Travis's critique is that many Christians live these humdrum, defeated lives. They act like they're losing.
They drag their bottom lip on the ground every time something goes wrong.
Yes. But the theology of Romans 8 says the victory is already secured. The script of history ends with the believer winning because of Christ.
But here's the pushback. If the game is rigged for us, why does it still feel so hard? Why do we get tackled? Why do we lose our jobs or get sick?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And Pastor Travis offers a key insight here. He suggests that when God allows difficulty or bumps us back, it's not because he's losing control.
Okay.
It's because he is trying to get us to live at our optimum potential.
Optimum potential.
We tend to settle. We settle for a subpar existence. Comfort, ease, safety. God intervenes to keep us on the path to that victory. And even when we face opposition, the dynamic has changed because of who is with us.
Oh, this brings up the playground analogy. This one really stuck with me.
It's a classic.
So picture a third grader on a school playground. And this kid is getting surrounded by bullies. He's intimidated. He's scared. He's about to give up his lunch money. Mm-hmm. But then his big brother shows up.
And not just any big brother, the seventh grader, the one who's had a growth spurt.
Right. The sheer size difference, the dynamic shifts instantly.
Instantly.
Now, the third grader isn't any stronger physically than he was 10 seconds ago. He didn't take a magic pill. But his position has changed because of who is standing behind him.
Who can be against us? It doesn't mean nobody will try. The bullies are still there. It means their opposition is irrelevant.
So we have this protector. We have this victory. But there's a catch. Or maybe not a catch, but a necessary step to realize this. We talked about stewardship earlier, but there is also a concept Pastor Travis calls the exchange.
This was my favorite illustration from the entire text. The macaroni necklace.
This hits every parent right in the feels.
It really does. Right. So set the scene for us.
You have a father and his little daughter, and she makes him a macaroni necklace. You know, the kind dried pasta, maybe some glitter on a piece of fuzzy yarn.
A masterpiece of preschool engineering.
And she loves it. It's her prized possession. But then the father does something strange. He asks her to give it to him.
And not just to wear it. He wants to take it.
Right. And she says no. She made it. It's hers. It's her treasure. He asks again. Honey, give me the necklace.
She clutches it tighter. She thinks he's trying to take it away.
Exactly. She thinks she's losing something. Finally, with tears in her eyes, She trusts him. She hands over this crusty breaking macaroni necklace.
And what does the father do?
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a velvet box containing a genuine pearl necklace.
Wow.
He didn't want to take her treasure to be mean.
Yeah.
He wanted to make an exchange.
That is powerful. Because we are that little girl.
We are. We hold on to our macaroni lives, our little plans, our bank accounts, our control, our anxieties. We think they're treasures.
And when God asks for them, when he asks for stewardship, we think he's robbing us.
God, why do you want my money? Why do you want my Sunday mornings?
And the whole time, he's trying to exchange our macaroni for pearls. He wants to give us something eternal, something that lasts.
Pastor Travis connects this directly to the logic of Romans 8.32.
He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things?
That's the logic argument.
It's an argument from the greater to the lesser.
Explain that logic for us.
Well, if you go to a car dealership and buy a $50,000 car for your child, are you going to refuse to buy them a $5 air freshener?
Of course not. I already paid the 50 grand. The air freshener is nothing.
Exactly. God already paid the highest price possible in the universe, the life of his son. That's the car. Why would he withhold the air freshener?
Wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So if we trust him with our salvation, we should trust him with our rent.
Precisely. So we have the manager, that's us. We have the victor, that's God. And we have the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But Romans 8 ends with this famous phrase that Pastor Travis unpacks, more than conquerors. That always sounded like a superhero catchphrase to me.
It does, yeah. More than conquerors. It's actually a specific Greek term. Hupernikao.
Huber, like hyper.
Yes. And nikao is the root word for Nike. Victory, yeah. Literally. Hyper conquerors. Yeah. Super victors.
Okay, but what does that mean practically? How do you do more than win? If I win the game 1-0, I still won.
Think about a war. To be a conqueror might mean you win the war, but you lost half your army, your city is burned down, and you're bankrupt. You survived.
A hollow victory.
Right. But to be more than a conqueror, to hyper-conquer, means you thrive through the difficulty. It means you actually come out better on the other side than you were when you went in.
So the trouble didn't just fail to kill you, it made you stronger.
That is a huge distinction. It's not just surviving the storm, it's learning to surf the hurricane.
Wow.
And Pastor Travis runs through that list of opposites in Romans 8.35 to prove this point. Paul asks, "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ?" And then he lists these terrible things: tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, sword.
And for each one, Pastor Travis suggests there is an implied opposite that the world chases. Tribulation is problems. The world chases peace. Distress is stress. The world chases rest.
Exactly. The world thinks, I need peace, so I must avoid tribulation. The hyper-conqueror says, I have peace in the midst of tribulation.
The love of Christ provides the fed stomach even in the famine.
Yes. It provides the sense of acceptance even when you are being persecuted.
He also pointed out something interesting about the grammar. The text asks, WHO shall separate us, not what?
Yes, that's a sharp observation. Pastor Travis warns that it is often a who that hinders our race. It might be people. It might be critics, social media trolls. He even mentions it could be people within the church who cause division.
Or a who at work. Or a who in your family.
Right. But the conclusion of the sermon is absolute. For I am persuaded. Nothing. No height, no depth, no creature. The connection to the divine love is unbreakable.
So let's bring this all together because we started with a paradox. On one hand, you are a steward. You don't own your life. You are working at God's store. You are being audited. That's the duty.
Right.
But on the other hand, you are the little brother on the playground. You are the recipient of the rigged game. You are the hyper-conqueror. That's the victory.
And when you overlay them, it changes the nature of the stewardship, doesn't it?
It has to.
You aren't stewarding out of a fear of punishment. You aren't managing the assets because you're afraid the boss is going to fire you.
You're doing it because he gave you the pearls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You serve the master, not because he's a tyrant, but because he spared not his own son for you. The duty is fueled by gratitude. The service is grounded in the victory.
That's the balance.
Well said.
We are coming to the end of our dive here. Again, I want to encourage you to go to the source. These are deep topics, and Pastor Travis covers a lot of ground we couldn't touch.
Uh-huh.
Go to faithwayfbc.com or search for Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church on your favorite podcast app or YouTube.
And as we close, I want to leave you with one final image from the sermon that I found very moving. It really sums up the audience of one concept.
Okay.
Pastor Travis told the story of a young concert pianist.
Oh, right. The one with the standing ovation.
Yes. This young man finishes a flawless performance. The crowd of thousands rises to their feet. Thunderous applause, flowers being thrown on stage. But the pianist just sits on the bench, head down, looking sad.
And his friend comes backstage and asks, "What is wrong with you? Listen to them. Everyone is cheering."
And the pianist looks up and says, "Not everyone. There was one man in the balcony who didn't stand up. That man is my teacher."
Wow.
The pianist didn't care about the applause of the thousands. He only cared about the approval of the one who taught him.
That is the question to walk away with today. In your stewardship, in your battles, in your daily grind, are you playing for the applause of the crowd, or are you looking up to the balcony for the approval of the master? Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you next time.